Good Saturday morning, Nashville, Tennessee. You are tuning into the Michelle and Junie Show here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Michelle Knezevic in New York today for a wedding. So it is just going to be me. My name is Junie Riddle. As you know, if you tune into this show every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, it's going to be manned by me and my boy Jared Cassidy behind the glass there, running the ones and twos on the board. Jared, how we doing this morning?
What up, Nashville? Doing great.
Absolutely. So conference championship week ended last weekend. We now have Super Bowl 57 set in the books, and I called it. I said it was going to be Chiefs-Eagles. I think I might have been the only one that went Chiefs-Eagles last week. Because everybody was riding high on Joe Burrow and the Bengals. I know you were, but you picked the 49ers last
year. Yeah, it's just depressing for the 49ers. I mean, without that injury, we could have gotten a lot more, but we were robbed.
I agree with that. I think it would have been a much closer game if Purdy wouldn't have gotten hurt so early on. But, you know, the Eagles playing at home, you know, Philadelphia with how ruckus their crowd is, especially in a championship setting, I just didn't think there was no way that Brock Purdy, as well as he's played, I just didn't think that there was any way that he was going to be the first rookie to go to the Super Bowl. As many rookies that have had some super successful campaigns, you really thought Mr. Irrelevant was going to go into Philadelphia, one of the most hostile environments in the NFL, and get a win in there?
I mean, man, he's been playing great as of lately.
That's true.
You can't say that he wasn't. He stepped in. I mean, as soon as, like I said last week, whenever Trey Lance went out and Garoppolo stepped in, they got better. Garoppolo went out, Brock Purdy stepped in, they got better. I just thought that it would continue. That defense is still phenomenal. I will give them that, but it just wasn't a good day for him.
It was the number one versus number two defense. I just think Philadelphia's offense was a little too much. Guys, we're going to get into a lot of different topics today. We're going to get into the Titans OC search, the future of the quarterback position for the Titans, and Mike Vrabel and what he has been doing since the firing of John Robinson and how much power he has collected. So if you want to weigh in on the conversation, you can give us a phone call or text to the WilsonCountyHyundai.com phone line at 615-737-1025. But if you've tuned into this show, like I had mentioned earlier, you're going to understand that we always get our Saturday mornings with the Morning Brew. So Jared, hit that music and let's get into the main headlines.
Taking you around the sports world for the biggest headlines. This is the Morning Brew, presented by Nashville Jam Company on Michelle and Junie.
Let's get started this morning with our own Nashville Predator All-Star goalie, UC Saros, and Connor Hellebuck from the Winnipeg Jets, leading the Central Division to win the Tendy Tandem Crown last night in the NHL All-Star Skills Challenges that they had going on. It's pretty impressive. I didn't watch it, but I watched the recap of it and some social media highlights, Jared. I don't know if you saw, but UC Saros hitting that full ice shot in that little slot that they used to cover the goals. Quite impressive by UC.
Yeah, he got a goalie goal, trying to get a little bit of the Pecorine magic going. But, Pekka did it during a regular season, so quite a bit different, but still incredible to go the full length of the ice as far as a goalie. I mean, they don't touch the puck like that to pass or to shoot.
Yeah.
So to have that skill to be able to pull something like that up, pretty incredible for a pretty incredible man, UC Staros.
UC Staros. I love that. We actually had Sean Henry on yesterday, and he used the same term too. And I mean, when you go back-to-back all-star seasons in your first two full seasons as the starting headlining goalie for the Nashville Predators, you know, UC has been a staple of this organization. And in my opinion, he is the reason that they're even relevant this year with the way that they have been playing. They're going to have to really get it going after the All-Star break, couple points out of the playoffs. They're kind of rolling into this All-Star break on a hot streak. But
yeah, they've won three in a row.
And I thought they were some good wins. You know, the Winnipeg Jets, Los Angeles Kings, New Jersey Devils, those are all playoff teams currently. So getting some big wins against those teams, but still – on the outside looking in, needing a lot to go their way. You know, the Preds, in my opinion, have played, I'd say, pretty well at home here at Bridgestone Arena, but on the road, and especially on those road trips, they can kind of lose track of what they're doing. They're going to need to get on track and get some key wins on the road in order to make a push to make the playoffs again.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the California trip early on in the season, they did pretty well in that. And then the Canada trip here recently, they've played pretty well in those as well. But like you said, at home, it's been a completely different team at home. But they've had some good spurts on the road. We just got to stop the losing skids throughout the rest of the season. Like you said, they've got some good people. They got some good teams that they're going to have to jump if they want to make it into the playoffs. They're a couple points out now. So we'll see. We got a lot of hockey in front of us.
They can't afford it. They can't afford it. But turning over to the NFL, you know, there is 5 head coaching vacancies, 2 of which have been plugged up this weekend. DeMeco Ryans, defensive coordinator for the San Francisco 49ers, got hired for his former team, the Houston Texans, which I think is a really, really good hire for that organization. You know, they've gone through 2 head coaches in the last 2 years, moving off Lovie Smith after 1 year, and now they think that they've found that their guy that they're going to go with. Sean Payton to the Denver Broncos. The Denver Broncos are going to have to trade, I believe it's a first and a second, to the Saints because he's still under contract with New Orleans for the next 2 years. So in order to get him, this is going to be the first head coaching trade that we've seen in a while. And so he is going to be manning up in Denver with Russell Wilson to see what he can do with that roster. What do you think of those coaching hires?
I think it's pretty wild. I think that you're giving up a lot. Obviously, you got Russell Wilson, you know, turbulent season last year on his ride that he's famous for now. But to have a coach like Sean Payton come in and step in, and he has a chance to rebuild that organization. A lot of good people in that organization. Got some pretty good people on offense. Okay, defense. They're going to have to beef up the defense for sure. Playing in that division is one of the hardest divisions in the NFL. But if you remember the last NFL head coach trade that we had, it was a certain Bill Belichick that came along with that.
Really? I thought Gruden got traded after Belichick.
Yeah, okay, Gruden. So two pretty big head coaches, though, that involved in a trade. You don't see it very often, but pretty neat to see, but a pretty heavy price tag for him.
No, most definitely. And in your opinion, out of those two head coaching hires, which one do you think is the better job? Because for me, I think DeMeco Ryans got the better job in Houston than what is going on in Denver with Russell Wilson and all the money that's being allocated there.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. Obviously, the division helps a lot in this scenario. The AFC South is just not a premier division in this league. Where the Broncos are is just too tough of a division. I just think that his hand's going to be kind of held with what he has, and especially they're going to be under the heat and under the microscope for the next couple of years, especially having Sean Payton there.
I agree, and on top of that, with all the money that Denver has allocated around their roster, the amount of money that they're going to be paying Sean Payton, the draft capital that they had to spend in order to get Sean Payton, you know, this is going to be a big deal for Denver going forward.
Yeah, they gave up a lot.
And then I'm looking at Houston. You know, Houston made the Deshaun Watson trade. They're picking number 2 overall, might be in the mix with the Bears for the number 1 pick to try and go get their guy that they want. But Houston, after trading with Cleveland, and, you know, Cleveland's paying $230 million guaranteed to Deshaun Watson. And that cap hit didn't really mix in until next year, because, you know, they didn't know how long he was going to be suspended. But in my estimation, I think Cleveland is going to keep losing. And I don't know if Deshaun Agreed. I don't know if Deshaun Watson's going to start hopping back on that train that he was playing on in his 2019 and 2020 season when he was, you know, I would say right around that top 5 QB conversation. Definitely a top 3 QB in the AFC, and now you're not even looking at him as a top 10 QB in the AFC with the maturation that has set in with some of these younger quarterbacks really starting to hit into their groove. So you're looking at Houston possibly getting, you know, a bunch of young draft picks. You know, they were probably the worst team in the NFL this past season with Davis Mills at the quarterback position. So you get your coach, you got a bunch of picks, you got a bunch of cap space. And you're in a division where, yeah, the Jacksonville Jaguars are looking pretty good. But the Titans' future is unsure. The Colts' future is surely unsure because they don't. Number one, I think Chris Ballard's on his last leg there in Indy.
Agreed.
And the Titans, you know, they've kind of reached the peak with their core, and they're going to have to make some new decisions with their new general manager in Rand Carthon as well. But let's move over to the NBA because there's been a lot of crazy things going on in the NBA here recently. Kyrie Irving requests a trade yesterday from the Brooklyn Nets. Him and Kevin Durant haven't seemed to really put it together the last 3 years that they've been playing on the same roster up there in Brooklyn. He is trying to get out. What do you think of that as a Boston Celtics fan who I can tell by the tone of your voice earlier before the show that you are not a big Kyrie Irving guy?
No. I mean, don't get me wrong. He's a great talent, but he also has an ego that comes along with it. And when you have an ego like that on a team of five people, it's hard to get around that. And
right.
You're putting him with Durant. I mean, the biggest problem with them is that we've never seen both of them healthy and together at the same time and on the same sheet. It's just tough. I really don't see them trading him. I see them making him play out his contract. I mean, the only really possible destination right now is going to be the Lakers. They're in talks right now of, you know, possibly that being a destination.
But where are the Lakers at in the West right now?
Well,
like 12th?
No, the problem
13th?
The only problem is, too, is that the Lakers have a lot of money. They have to stay up under the cap. So, I mean, it's going to be tough for them. The Lakers are going to have to move somebody and then acquire him. And then you still have Russell Westbrook on that team, too. That's just a lot of egos in one team. But I wish him the best of luck. Obviously it didn't work out with the Celtics. It was kind of more on his part than it was on the Celtics' part. But for sure, man, it's what a wild ride the Kyrie Irving saga has been.
So the Lakers are currently 12th in the West, so I was right. And they're 25-28.
Yeah.
You know, Anthony Davis can't get on the floor. LeBron James is literally carrying this team at his old age, which, you know, a lot of people still say he's the best player in the league right now. I don't agree with that.
Nope.
You know, he was the best player for, you know, over a decade in the NBA. But, you know, at his age and where he's at now, if you're the best player in the NBA, even if you don't have another superstar, you need to be in the playoff conversation, especially in the West, which I would say right now in the Western Conference, for as many years as that was the dominant conference, it really seems like the East has kind of taken over this year.
Yep. A lot of good teams in the East. Obviously, you got your top four or five in the West. You got a lot of good players out there in the West, though. Luka Doncic, Ja Morant, like so many good top-tier players that are out there. Going to be hard for the Lakers to make a run at anything this year. I think they're more planning for next year, but you never know. If they get Kyrie, then you do a kind of like a slight reset for next year and go at it next year.
So the last thing I want to bring up about the NBA, which is really not about sports in general, has been the last couple nights. There have been some pretty intense fighting in the NBA that we haven't really seen in a long time. A couple nights ago, the Grizzlies were taking on the Cavs, and Dylan Brooks, whether he got fouled or whether the shot was blocked, rolled over, and it seemed like very intentionally rammed his fist into Donovan Mitchell's parts down low. And I thought it was a cheap shot, and Donovan Mitchell threw the ball at him and got up in his face and his grill. And then last night, when the Magic and T-Wolves were playing each other, a total of five players got ejected. And it was initially between Austin Rivers and Mo Bamba, and then Jaden Daniels and Tyrene Prince for the T-Wolves, and also Jalen Suggs for the Magic were also ejected in this big scrum. Fists were thrown, tackles, headlocks, all the 9 yards. Like, what is going on in the NBA? Is it turning into like the WWE right now?
It's crazy.
With the entertainment of all these fights?
It's definitely crazy town. I mean, you look at the last night, like that, in the words of Pete Weber, it was an all-out Donnybrook last night. I mean, they were trying to go at it. I don't really understand all this, and obviously, you know, there are going to be ejections, there's going to be fines, we're going to start seeing that. Now, you go back to the Dylan Brooks play, Donovan Mitchell have had a past in the past years, they've gotten kind of at each other, so that's just a continuation. We're definitely going to see something from that as well.
Dylan Brooks suspended, Donovan Mitchell fined after that altercation. So, you know, some crazy things just going on in the NBA. But one topic that we didn't touch here in the Morning Brew that we are going to spend an entire segment on was the GOAT of the NFL. Tom Brady has decided to retire for a second year in a row. Me and Jared think this one is actually official. We're going to go through memory lane and talk about Tom Brady and his impact on the NFL for the last 23 years. You're listening to the Michelle and Junie Show here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
Really, thank you guys so much to every single one of you for supporting me, my family, my friends, my teammates, my competitors. I could go on forever. There's too many. Thank you guys for allowing me to live my absolute dream. I wouldn't change a thing. Love you all.
That was Tom Brady in his video on Twitter earlier this week announcing his second retirement again. Wow. I mean, Tom Brady was expected to be a free agent this offseason that rumors were fluttering around, especially in this market, that this might be a possible landing spot for him to come here and play for the Titans with his relationship that he had with Mike Vrabel. And the option was on the table after the 2019 season when he was a free agent originally to come here to Tennessee, but they elected after Tannehill led them to the AFC Championship to go along with him. And then what does Brady do? He ends up going to the Buccaneers, wins another Super Bowl, has another really competitive year last year, and really when the roster kind of dismantled on the defensive end and his offensive line got banged up super bad, This year was probably the ugliest one of his career.
For sure.
And not even that, though. You know, Tom Brady still had 27 touchdowns, over 4,500 yards, and only 7 interceptions.
I mean, he can still do it, man. He can still sling the rock.
Which brings me to this. Tom Brady can definitely still play football, but when he's looking at his options here, he's looking at the Las Vegas Raiders. I assume that he looked into the San Francisco 49ers because we know that he's from that area, and he's looking at the Titans. He's really primarily looking at these teams and saying, could I go there and win? And the likelihood of it, because San Francisco probably told him that, no, you're not coming here. What he probably thought was his realistic options of where he could go, he didn't think that he could win. I think he looked at those situations like the Raiders, like the Titans, their offensive lines, the direction of the organizations, and I think that he said, you know what, I'm going to jump off this train while people still have a good memory of me. I don't want to be like Brett Favre in 2010. I don't want to be like Ben Roethlisberger in 2011. I don't want to be like Peyton Manning, although he won the Super Bowl. I don't want to be like Peyton Manning where I'm getting benched by Brock Osweiler in 2015.
Yeah, I mean, Peyton Manning definitely wasn't the same. I mean, Big Ben, same scenario. You could tell that it was their time.
It was different. It was different. And this year, although Brady put up really good numbers, and at times in the fourth quarter when it mattered the most, and even Big Ben did this the year prior. He had 7 fourth quarter comebacks. The greats can still do it and turn it on in certain moments, but they can't sustain it throughout an entire game. But I think Brady saw the writing on the wall and decided that this was a wrap. But for you, Jared, as a Patriots fan, what are some of the best memories that you have growing up watching the greatest of all time do it on a year-to-year basis? What are some of the best moments that you can recall?
I mean, obviously, number one, that would be the Super Bowl with the Atlanta Falcons. Biggest comeback in the Super Bowl. Hard to top that one. But, man, what a ride to begin with. I mean, he comes in, he tells Robert Kraft, I'm the best decision that you ever made. I'm going to take this job over. I'm going to beat out Drew Bledsoe at some point. He didn't beat out Drew Bledsoe. Drew Bledsoe got hurt. He comes in. A lot of Patriots fans, a lot of fans just of the NFL thought that, man, the Patriots are done. Like, and they weren't anything to begin with. Like, the Patriots were a non-existent team for a long time. But they had many players. They had some good people. I don't know, man. Some of my favorite memories, though, are when Randy Moss joined the Patriots. Hard to beat that. I've always been a Randy Moss fan. And watching Tom Brady sling some darts to him. Just some unbelievable catches. Obviously, some bad Super Bowl runs right there. Tough to witness those. I don't really want to go down that street. But, man, I hate to see it go. I told Ian Safar, because I see him at night, told him I would love to see him come to Tennessee just because it would give me an opportunity to go see him some more. I saw Tom the last time he came to Nashville when the Titans beat him, and he ran that little Philly special to the right.
That was an ugly game.
Yeah, that was not good, man. That was not good. But, I mean, say what you want. You might not think that he's the greatest to do it, but he is. Plain and simple. The man is a proven winner. He is a proven winner with the Patriots. He's a proven winner with the Tampa Bay Bucks. And the Tampa Bay Bucks were in a complete non-existent franchise for a while. They had Jameis Winston, who was doing nothing but throwing picks. And you replace him with one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game, and you go on and you win a Super Bowl. Hard to argue with that.
No, I agree with you. I definitely think Brady is the greatest of all time. He might not be the best talent. I mean, Peyton Manning was the best regular season quarterback that I have ever seen. In the playoffs, there was nobody that could touch Brady. There was absolutely no one that could touch Tom Brady. And you were a fan of the Patriots growing up, and you rooted for them. I despised the Patriots growing up.
A lot of people do.
Because, you know, me as a Steelers fan, we had Ben Roethlisberger, and the one guy that we couldn't beat, especially in the playoffs, was Tom Brady. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers played the Patriots in 3 AFC championships. 3. And they lost every single time. And when the Steelers did go to the Super Bowl, they went to the Super Bowl 3 times while Brady was in New England, and they did not have to go through New England one time. I remember the last time they made the Super Bowl. It was against the Green Bay Packers in Super Bowl 45. And I remember that divisional round, the Steelers had beaten the Ravens in an epic game. And then I was sitting and watching the Jets and Patriots and thinking, my God, if the Jets can get a win, we will go to the Super Bowl. Because I knew we couldn't beat Tom Brady in New England. And there were so many different times that I wanted them to so bad. And after so many years of losing, and I think I only got to witness 1 or 2 victories that Big Ben had over the Steelers when Tom Brady was playing. And I remember in 2018 when they beat him in the regular season, it was in Pittsburgh, I literally wept tears of joy because I was like, we finally beat these guys. We finally beat these guys. And it just goes to show you, when you're a quarterback in this league and you're drafted in the 6th round and you go to the right place with the right coach, which is something that we've been preaching on this show for weeks, it can truly make all the difference. Tom Brady, 10 Super Bowl appearances, 7 victories, more than any other NFL franchise. Congratulations to Tom Brady. Since he left New England and we got to see more of his personality in Tampa, I've actually truly become a fan of his and rooted for his success, because there's nothing that he can do or lose to uncement what he's done and his legacy in the NFL. So he will truly be missed. And out of those 10 Super Bowls, only one of them sucked, and that was when they absolutely blew the Chiefs out of the water.
Yeah.
But you knew when Tom Brady was in the Super Bowl, it was going to be entertaining. Every single Super Bowl he was in, it was a 1-score game. It came down to the wire. And whether you loved him or whether you hated him, you always had a rooting interest in those Super Bowls.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. I mean, obviously, we've talked a bunch about the Eagles just because of the, you know, they're in the Super Bowl. But that game against Donovan McNabb was still one of the better ones that I've witnessed Tom Brady play. I mean, to keep that level of intensity and accuracy for those amount of years in New England and even carrying it on the Tampa Bay is just strictly incredible. I mean, the man is a proven winner. He can do it. It's going to be sad, man. We are seeing the last of these great quarterbacks go on. Really, the only one that's left at this point is Aaron Rodgers. I mean, over the past 10, 15 years, we're seeing a lot of them go. Like you said, Big Ben. I mean, look at all those ones, like those championships from them. When the Patriots started this run, nobody thought that it would end like this. You could have polled everybody in the world, and they would have said that. But, man, 6th-round draft pick, Mr. Irrelevant, turned into be one of the greatest stories quarterbacks in the NFL in its great history.
No, totally agree. Tom Brady, excellent career. We're going to pivot, though, back here locally, and we're going to get into a theory of mine about one of the top Titans offensive coordinators and why a lot of people have doubt, but I don't think you necessarily should. We're going to get into that next. You're listening to the Michelle and Junie Show here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
The first day that I met Coach Reed was at the facility. We had like the meetings, like the top 30 visits. So I was in there for like 5 hours. He's just going grilled. Through plays, going through plays. And I'm going to give you all the inside scoop. Matt Nagy, who was the offensive coordinator then, he really liked me. So he gave me the plays they were going to go over the night before. So Coach Reed's finding out here live on New Heights podcast.
Oh my gosh.
Matt Nagy! How could you?
Let's go.
And yeah, so of course I crushed the meeting. I stayed up all night studying those plays.
It's like, man, this kid is locked in. We got ourselves a winner here.
That was Patrick Mahomes talking about offensive coordinator at the time, Matt Nagy, giving him the answers in a meeting before meeting with head coach Andy Reid because he believed that Patrick Mahomes was the guy. Well, I can tell you this, Matt Nagy was right because Patrick Mahomes currently is the best quarterback in the NFL. He saw the potential in him. Now, Matt Nagy, as of late, since he's been a potential candidate to be the next Titans offensive coordinator, has gotten a lot of flack because everything that everyone has seen as of late was from his time with the Chicago Bears. And I understand that. You know, when you look at him and what the Bears did during his time there, it wasn't very impressive. But I think we need to put a little context in this because I was just sitting here thinking about it. You know, I've never been super low on Matt Nagy. I've always thought that he's been a pretty solid coordinator. And I think what a lot of people are not looking at is the fact that you're looking at what he did as a head coach. And being a head coach and being a coordinator are completely different. When you're a head coach, you're looking at offensive schemes, offensive rotations, you know, defensive schemes, defensive rotations. And you are the CEO of the entire team. The field management, the trainers, the players, the other coaches. You got to go through and manage everybody. And that's a lot to take on. When you're the offensive coordinator, those responsibilities shrink exponentially. So I think Matt Nagy has gotten a bit of a bad rep. And I'm going to go through and we're going to look at Matt Nagy's history as a coach in the NFL right now. So in 2008, Matt Nagy gets hired on with Andy Reid as a coaching intern with the Philadelphia Eagles. 2008 is a really good year. Because the Eagles were a team that looked like they were dead in the water that season. And they wind up turning the ship with Donovan McNabb and Brian Westbrook and Brian Dawkins and all these guys. And they end up making it to the NFC Championship. And he was in there through that transition with Michael Vick and some of those really, really high-powered offenses with Andy Reid. He ends up staying with Andy Reid and they get canned. And he became a coaching assistant in 2010. And when Andy Reid got fired, he went on to Kansas City with Andy Reid as the quarterback's coach. So he went from being like an offensive intern, assistant promoted, and then his last 2 years with the Eagles, he was the offensive quality control coach. He then moves up to the quarterback coach in 2013 and 2015. They go out and they draft Alex Smith from the 49ers. And let's look at Alex Smith's numbers before he went to Kansas City and was with Andy Reid. It was pretty awful. If you can remember what Alex Smith was like in San Francisco, I mean, you're talking about one of the biggest first overall quarterback bust in history until he went to Kansas City. 2-5 his rookie year, 7-9 the following year, 2-5 the year after that. Couldn't stay healthy, was out the entire 2008 season. 5-5, 3-7, and then finally, when Harbaugh got hired in San Francisco, they had a 13-3 year, and the following year he went 6-2-1, and then lost his job to Colin Kaepernick. The most touchdowns that he had in his time at San Francisco was 18 in an entire season. He goes on to Kansas City. He goes to 3 Pro Bowls. And in his worst year, the amount of touchdowns he had was 13. And that's because he missed half of the season there. His worst years in Kansas City were his best years in San Francisco. And you're talking about Matt Nagy, who was the quarterback's coach for the first 2 years. So he had to rework the confidence of Alex Smith. Then he gets promoted to offensive coordinator. The first year, they don't do as well. They still make it to the playoffs, and they lose to the Tennessee Titans in that crazy game that the Titans more than likely shouldn't have won. It was the game where Mariota threw the touchdown pass to himself. A lot of crazy things had to happen. The following year in 2017, Alex Smith is an MVP candidate. Threw for over 4,000 yards, 26 touchdowns, and only 5 interceptions. And because of that, Matt Nagy gets hired as the Bears head coach. Now, Mitch Trubisky was drafted the year before Matt Nagy was the coach there in Chicago. His record as a starter in 2017 was 4-8. You want to know what Mitch Trubisky's record was the first year Matt Nagy? He was 11-3, and he threw for 24 touchdowns and 12 interceptions rather than going 7 touchdowns and 7 interceptions in a 4-8 year in his rookie campaign. They went to the playoffs twice while he was in Chicago. Okay? The Bears haven't sniffed the playoffs without Nagy here as of late. And again, it's only been 1 year, but they have the number one pick this year. All right? So, Mitch Trubisky, his record with the Chicago Bears was 29-21 in 2 playoff appearances. And everybody makes that sound like it's awful. Imagine you take a head coaching job. You're the CEO of this team. And they take Mitchell Trubisky over Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. And he still has a winning record and takes him to the playoffs and wins Coach of the Year. All right? And this guy discovered Patrick Mahomes. Okay? Now, I get it. You're talking about Justin Fields and how he was putting him in bad situations. But listen, he found Justin Fields, and Justin Fields looked really good in his sophomore year this season.
Yep.
Justin Fields was not ready to play his rookie year. Okay? But the Bears didn't have a valuable option in front of him. Fans were screaming for him. And on top of that, he had no good receivers, no offensive line, and the defense that had really helped that team get over the edge was getting old, and they were moving off some of their players. And then you fire Nagy after that. Matt Nagy made a good pick in finding Justin Fields, because I think Justin Fields is going to be in Chicago for a while. With how talented this guy is, once they put it together, he's going to be in there. But I feel like Matt Nagy, as an offensive mind, a guy that looks at talent at the quarterback position and knowing what he can get, is really underrated. And I think right now with where the Tennessee Titans are at, and they're trying to go out and find their guy of the future, because they're looking at the landscape of the AFC here, and they're seeing the writing on the wall. And Michelle and I, we went through all the starting quarterbacks in the AFC and the NFC yesterday when I was filling in for Chase on Chase and Michelle. And in the NFC, Ryan Tannehill is easily, probably without question, a top 5 quarterback. In the AFC, he's barely scraping the top half. The Titans know that Tannehill is not going to be here likely after this upcoming season. They need to get a guy in there that not only has a great modern NFL offensive mind, but a guy that can go out there and help find that next new talent. And that guy could be Matt Nagy. Quit watching ESPN and Fox Sports and what all these major media talking heads are saying, because they're not diving deep into the Bears. They're not diving deep into the situation. I think Matt Nagy would be a great offensive coordinator hire right here in Tennessee when they're trying to find their new offensive coordinator in the new direction of this offense. We're going to continue this conversation coming up next. I want to hear Jared's opinion on my theory about Matt Nagy. Also, we're going to talk about other offensive coordinator positions or offensive coordinator candidates that we're looking into for the Tennessee Titans. You're listening to Michelle and Junie here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
I don't know, maybe before it was public. Like, look, I think it's Matt Nagy. And I think the only reason that it's not already Matt Nagy is because the Chiefs are still playing. Like, now, I don't know that. I'm not reporting that. That's just what I feel has happened. And so I think that's the – like, to me, if Kansas City weren't still playing, I feel like it would have been done by now.
That was Tim Hasselbeck earlier this week on our airwaves saying that he believes that Matt Nagy is going to be the next offensive coordinator and that if the Chiefs had already lost in the playoffs, that it would already be a done deal. I spoke last segment valiantly about why I think that Matt Nagy should be the number one guy. I think people are looking too much into the national narrative about his stint with the Bears. He's been with a lot of good teams. He's been in a lot of transition. He's been with Andy under Andy Reid for his entire NFL career. So, Jared, after everything that I laid out last segment, what do you think of my Matt Nagy take, and do you think he should be the number one option to come here and be the next Tennessee Titans offensive coordinator?
Yeah, I think he's the number one candidate at the moment. I mean, outside of the house, right? Like, Tim Kelly obviously is probably the number one candidate inside of the house, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I have said many times on this show, I would like to see some outside voices come into this team just to get a different perspective from the old regime into the new regime. Now, when you look at Matt Nagy as the Bears head coach, you have to take that out of consideration because he was kind of dealt with the hand that he had, right? Like, he had the players that he had. He could only do so much with them. That franchise is not the greatest franchise in the last little stretch of years here, but he has done a lot with, you know, like getting Justin Fields was a big deal. Justin Fields coming in is obviously having a great, great couple of years, but I'm with you. He shouldn't have started his rookie year, but they didn't have an option, right? Like, they were handcuffed. So you have to look at the success that he's had with these people. Obviously, the Mahomes thing is a big deal. I think his play calling is good. I just think that when you don't have the players, it's hard to make those kind of adjustments.
And, I mean, look at the Bears quarterback situation, you know, ever since Jim McMahon, you know, in 1985. The Bears have never had a good quarterback, ever. The Bears have always been a defensive-minded team. Defense, run the ball, and they tried to transition, I feel like, the identity of their franchise when they went out and got Matt Nagy, but they just simply didn't have the horses to do it. I'm sorry. You know, Mitch Trubisky is that guy, that borderline starter.
He's just a dude.
He might be, you know, somewhere in the world, the 30th to the 35th best quarterback on the planet. Which, I mean, that's great, but there's only 32 NFL teams. And when you're trying to go out and find your guy and you trade up and really ship the farm out to go get the wrong guy in the draft, that's going to set you back for a long time. They went out and made the right hire. I feel like Matt Nagy was the right guy to go out and get.
Yeah.
But they had the wrong guy. They mortgaged their future. They didn't have an offensive line. They didn't have receivers. And again, their defense was aging out, and yet he still was coach of the year. He still took them to the playoffs, a double doink away from a playoff victory. And on top of that, Mitch Trubisky had a winning record under him. Do we look at Mitch Trubisky and think, oh, yeah, that's an above 500 quarterback? Does that come to mind when you think of Mitchell Trubisky?
Not off the top of my head, no.
I wouldn't say so either. And, I mean, even when he was with Pittsburgh this year, he wasn't good. He was 2-3. His touchdown-to-interception ratio surely wasn't 2-1 like it was with Matt Nagy. It wasn't. So I look at Matt Nagy, and I think to myself, the man discovered Patrick Mahomes. He probably maximized Mitch Trubisky's potential in Chicago. Again, in Chicago. And then now he's back with Andy Reid looking for another opportunity to be an OC. But you brought up another good point here. And another big candidate for this offensive coordinator job is Tim Kelly. TD was on earlier this week talking about the potential of the Titans staying in-house with their offensive coordinator and going with Tim Kelly. Here's TD.
Yeah, I think Tim Kelly would probably be considered the front runner because the familiarity standpoint. Justin Outen is a guy that they also requested to interview. This was back when he was technically still the Broncos offensive coordinator with Sean Payton coming in there. Who knows what happened, but that's something. And now with him not having an OC job, hey, he could be someone to come in and coach the offensive line.
Yeah.
So you have that, but and there are ties there dating back to Houston, and also he coached the offense or tight ends rather under LaFleur, Coach LaFleur in Green Bay. But as far as a favorite is concerned, I think it's probably Tim Kelly, who I think would fit the best. That's a tough one because you want to say Matt Nagy just because you saw the success that he had, and that will allow Vrabel to be able to just kind of have Nagy oversee the offense, and he just come in and sprinkle in his flavor from time to time, kind of like what he did with Arthur Smith. So I think that would be a good fit. But ideally, and this is one that Jarrett had brought up, and I like the scenario where you bring in Charles London to be the pass game coordinator and kind of like an assistant quarterback coach, and then you have Tim Kelly take over the offensive coordinator job.
That was TD talking about Tim Kelly and the possibility of him becoming the next Titans OC. And I agree. Listen, I don't think Tim Kelly would be the worst candidate to go out and get. I know a lot of Titans fans are sick of the in-house promotion. I think that the notion of, well, they're not really changing things up if they stay in-house, I disagree with that. I think everybody kind of has their own perception of how things need to be ran. And when you're the guy that's the decision maker, I think that makes all the difference. And when I look at a guy like Tim Kelly, when he was the offensive coordinator at Houston, you know, they were a really, really good team out there with DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watson. Now, Bill O'Brien went off and shipped, DeAndre Hopkins to Arizona for pennies on the dollar. And that didn't pan out well for that team at all. And I think Bill O'Brien, in hindsight, realizes that he probably shouldn't have taken over that GM role there in Houston.
Yeah, he put them into the ground, man.
He sure did. But when you look at the offense that Tim Kelly had when he was at Houston, I mean, they won their first playoff game in a long time over Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills in 2019. And then they went up in Kansas City. In Kansas City. In Arrowhead Stadium, they were up 24-0 on the Kansas City Chiefs. And it wasn't even an offensive play. It was a fake punt that they called, and it didn't work, and it really helped elevate and get the Chiefs back into the game. So, and on top of that, in 2020, after they traded DeAndre Hopkins, who led the league in passing yards? It was Deshaun Watson. Okay? So this whole notion that hiring within is a bad thing, I disagree with. And especially if they go out and get that young quarterback that can sling the rock like a modern NFL quarterback needs to do, then Tim Kelly could be a pretty valuable option. I still would take Matt Nagy, though.
Yep,
and the reason being is that would show me that Vrabel's willing to get out of his comfortable zone.
Yeah, willing to change is a big deal right now.
Well, because a lot of these guys came from Houston. A lot of these guys Vrabel knows. A lot of these guys Vrabel's not challenged by. And I get that. There's a lot of head coaches like Mike Tomlin's like that. But I think if they went out and got a guy like Matt Nagy, and then you get a guy like Rand Carthon to run the GM office, I think that shows that this organization is willing to make a transition, and they're willing to look at all of their options in order to become the best organization they possibly can. Amy Adams Strunk fired John Robinson, the guy that took this team out of the gutter from 2016 on. Never had a losing record, took them to the playoffs, drafted, their entire roster that they currently have, and turned them into contenders. She fired him after a few mistakes the last couple years. Because you want to know why? She wants championships. This organization, this town wants championships. And how are they going to get that? Coming up next, we're going to be talking about the Titans QB situation. We're going to be talking about Tannehill, the possibilities of him staying, the possibilities of him leaving. And if he were to leave, what options do the Titans had? Jared and I are both going to get into that next. You are listening to the Michelle and Junie Show here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.